Good morning and welcome to WHTC Money Matters with your hosts, Kerry Cooley and Jack Godfrey from the Cooley Godfrey Investment Group of Zeeland. The opinions voiced in this show are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial advisor, or tax advisor prior to investing. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. And now, WHTC Money Matters.
Good morning, Holland, Zealand. This is Kerry Cooley.
And this is Jack Godfrey. Today's show, we're going to talk about eight mistakes investors make. But I want to make sure you know this is a tape-recorded show. It's going to be aired July the 12th. Kerry and I are both gone that week. And so we're not going to do the market update because that's a couple weeks away. And we're going to do questions and every week we take questions from customers who write in, call in. We take a mix of the few, and it's always good fodder for other discussion topics.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, during the summer, we're busy with family, friends, and we're on our summer schedule, aren't we, Jack?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a summer schedule, but there's a lot going on here at, Cooley Godfrey, a lot of customers, again, a lot of call-ins, and but we also have family that we need to take care of during the summer.
Oh, yeah, I know. And, you know, that's the best time to do it, and that's when you travel. My wife teaches part-time. Your wife teaches part-time.
Whoa. My wife teaches full-time.
Okay.
Yeah, please.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Don't need her part-time, right?
No. So we have questions. So, you know, it's we always encourage you to call us at our office, 616-931-1223. You can hit 4. That'd be Janet, and she'd relay the questions to us. Or if you hit 0, somebody's going to pick up the phone and get one of us because we take a lot of questions, just people calling in. Or you can email us at www.cooleygodfrey.com. That's our website. Or email us at cooleygodfrey@lpl.com. So lots of ways to get a hold of us. And some people just have questions. Jack, what do you think about this? And, you know, once somebody says, Jack, what do you think about this? Then I say, you know, you realize that opens you up for question. Because when somebody asks a question, you need to get behind the curtain and say, what's generating that question? And so then
that's the only way that we can answer it correctly.
That's exactly right. So it's always good.
Here's one of our first questions this week. A listener has written in, and this listener writes, I am 66, fully retired, and on Social Security. And my wife works part-time. She is 65 and not yet on Social Security. We have $600,000 in IRAs and $600,000 in investments. We need $32,000 annually to supplement our income. Would it be better to withdraw from IRA accounts or after-tax investment accounts?
That's a great question. I mean, this is all... So one, he's done his budget and figured out we need not quite $3,000 a month, but $3,200. What the question doesn't answer is that includes Social Security or not Social Security. What's your take from that?
Well, my take from that is that, well, he is on Social Security. It says in
right, but he says we need $32,000 annually to supplement. So that must be in addition.
In addition.
All right. So,
okay.
So then you got to back up and say, what's your tax bracket that you want to be in?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he didn't say what his Social Security amount is.
No, he didn't. So, and that's a big question. That would be a question that we would ask him back.
And when he started taking Social Security would be another question. Did he take it at 62? Did he just start taking it at 66? And then how much does his wife make working part-time? So, you know, always the rule of thumb is try to manage your tax bracket. And when we say manage your tax bracket, you take money out of your $600,000 in non-qualified brokerage investments. Typically, that's going to come from dividends, interest first, which you're going to pay tax on anyway. After that, it's going to be shorter long-term capital gains.
Mm-hmm. Well, and let's just say figure that you put that $600,000 and you get 5% off of it. Well, that's $30,000 right there. They're almost all the way there. And you can maintain that principal. And so the $600,000 can be the milk cow the 5% will be the milk, and he's almost there to 32,000 and not touching the other 600,000 in IRAs. But I think there's more behind this too, Jack. The one of the things I would want to ask this listener is he's 66, she's 65. She hasn't reached full retirement age. So you'd want to look at when she turns 66, if that's her full retirement age, maybe it's 65, is how much will her Social Security benefit if she takes it now, or if she waits, or files and draws off of her husband type thing. You know, there's all those strategies out there that they would have to look at with her turning 66.
No, that is a very good question. So, you know, lots of questions we want to think about. And, you know, as you look into the question, where are the IRAs and where are the 600,000 in IRAs and 600,000 investments positioned? And you always want to have guaranteed income, investments, and then, of course, your Social Security and pension if you have all those. So all of those are going to generate income, and you need to take some off each one to manage your taxes in the appropriate manner. And we didn't really talk about the ability to convert some of those IRAs to Roth if it fits your tax bracket.
Yeah, and I was just thinking the same thing, Jack, is to keep them, you know, manage their tax bracket. How much could they potentially convert from the IRA to a Roth, therefore down the road passing this money on if they do, or if they take it out, avoiding taxes on the gains?
Right. All right, question number two. I'm thinking of starting my own business. Do you think it would be okay to take startup money out of my 401k? And I've got two letters.
You got two letters. Well,
not three, two.
All right. So here's my thinking. And it can be done, but in how you do it will be a big difference in taxes. So one way is you could take money out of the IRA, and if you're not 59 and a half, that money is taxed and has a 10% penalty on it. But if you set up the business correctly under a C corp and have a 401k plan, and you move your 401k money into the new 401k plan of your new company, you can actually borrow money against that to help start your business without paying the taxes or the penalty. You have to pay yourself back. But that may be a smarter way to go about this if it fits the situation. So, yeah, you can take the money out, but I wouldn't be too quick to do that because of taxes and penalty. Look at other alternatives.
Yep. I mean, money's pretty cheap today. The question is, can you borrow money cheaply? And that's if you have good credit rating, et cetera. Otherwise, probably this question wouldn't come up. I would take out of the 401k last. But where else are you going to get money? As we talked about, if you have good credit, you're going to be able to borrow money. So,
yeah, so good question. We have another question here, but we're going to take that question. We're going to hold that till right after break. Listeners, you're listening to WHTC Money Matters with Kerry Cooley.
And Jack Godfrey will be right back.
Hey, listeners, you're listening to WHTC Money Matters. Thanks for staying tuned to us. And this is Kerry Cooley.
And Jack Godfrey. Remind our listeners that today's show is being tape recorded for broadcast on July the 12th. Kerry and I will be gone that weekend. I have lots of kids coming in that weekend, grandkids, so it'll be a big weekend for us. And so we are going through questions. We have one question left. Here's a question. My son starts college in the fall. Can we use our savings bonds tax-free to pay for college costs? Yes, maybe, or no.
Maybe or no. Well, yeah, there's a lot of different rules behind this that you need to qualify for to know that, hey, can I use this money? Well, if you use I-bonds, and double E-bonds issued, and here's the key date, issued after 1989, you can use those to pay for college tuition, and you do not have to pay taxes on the interest you have earned. Okay, that's one, right, Jack?
Yep,
that's just one condition.
That's one condition. After 1989 issued, so that's one.
And then a second condition would be for the owner, at least 24 years of old when the bond was issued. So that's why it's important for the parent to own this, not the child. The child shouldn't be co-owner. The child needs to be the beneficiary of it, not the co-owner. So that's a second condition on this, where you can pay with these bonds and have pay no taxes on the interest. And there is a third condition, isn't there, Jack?
Yep, and that's an income condition. So in 2014, you must make less than $114,000 for joint returns and a single $76,000. And it's completely phased out if you will make over $144,000 joint and $91,000 single. So the rules again are got to be 20, the owner has to be 24 years or older. It's got to be bought. The bond should have been bought after 1989. You have to get an income limit, and then the taxes are null and void. No taxes.
If it's used for tuition for college, okay?
Right. Yep.
And that can be a two-year school. That can be a four-year college. So it has to be higher education above high school. So that's something that I didn't know was out there, and actually through questions that our listeners have asked, we did some research and found out the answer to it, and we are always learning new things also.
No, those are always things that, you know, we're trying to bring to you, questions that we have, and, you know, basically, you know, we try to make sure that we, when we ask people, do you have savings bonds, you need to know the value of your savings bonds. So I'm talking about a sidebar issue now. You can actually go to a website, figure that out, go to your local bank. You have to go to a bank, not a credit union, and they will cash them in. One of the things that we've brought up is there's some banks in town that require you to have an account there.
Mm-hmm.
There's some banks in town that don't require you to have a account in. And I've been sending people to Huntington because they don't require people to have an account.
And then at the end of the year, the bank will give you a statement, or you will get a statement saying you took these bonds out. Yep. And you have to report that on your taxes.
Yep. So that's a good thing. So today we're going to get right into our show. Our show is 8 Mistakes Investors Make. Well, we can go into a lot more than 8, but there is a lot of mistakes people make, and I won't even read off the sheet that we have because we have a sheet that tells us what those 8 are. But, you know, probably the biggest thing, and I had a customer in yesterday, Carrie, that kids came in, dad's getting up there in age, and you know, do we want to take any risk with dad's accounts? Well, they thought that we had a lot of his money.
Okay.
And so, you know, I said, we have a lot of people over the age of 80 years old. And I said, basically, we think they ought to be, depends on their money, 60 in equities, 40 in bonds, or 40 in equity, 60 in bonds and cash equivalent. Well, he was like 10% invested and 90% in cash.
Ouch. And the cash is making little
nothing.
Okay.
I mean, he almost had to pay to get more. So they go, wow, we didn't know that. So, you know, I go, he needs to invest more money.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they were asking me, and I didn't have hardly any of his money. You know, it was kind of a courtesy call to help dad and, you know, where to take money from because he needed to take some money out. But it's amazing how people think sometimes their dad or mom or grandma is invested and they really don't know the right story. And dad needed none of this money, none of this money. His Social Security and pension. He saves money out of that every month.
Wow. And you know, you think of that generation. You know, yeah. That's pretty common, though, that they want the money safe. They want it liquid. They don't want to tie it up. And that reminds me exactly of my grandpa, who kept money in his pocket, to underneath his bed, to a jar in the barn. And because a lot of them came through the Depression. And so, you know, that is just not knowing what you have out there can be a mistake. Or not knowing what mom and dad have and making sure that they are set up correctly and that they have the right beneficiaries on the account. So knowing what you have.
Well, no, that's knowing what you have is really a clue. And I go, what else you got? And he goes, well, I think I have some stock. That's what I think. So I finally got the statement from him today. And I go, you know, one of the things that this older gentleman was having is he was getting confused because he had so much stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, here's our statement. It's one page. For the first page is one page. It just says, here's your bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
You got 2 accounts. Here's your bottom line. Here's what you made.
Yep.
Well, isn't that pretty easy? Oh, yeah, but what about the rest of the pages? I go, this is pretty simple. You don't need to look at the rest of the page unless you want to.
Mm-hmm.
This is a pretty simple statement. So He had his stock some other place, and I said to the kids, it was documented correctly in a trust. Dad's money needs to be consolidated to one place, because then you're dealing with one place, not multiple. And I have never sold any of Dad's money, ever.
Okay.
Ever. So I said, I'm not going to do this, but you need to probably consolidate these, because you're going to have to take all these accounts. You're going to have to take your trust document. I'm now the trustee on the account once my dad passed away, and I got to figure out what to do with this. Have it at one place.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's with us or not.
Yeah, because, you know, we see too many situations like this, Jack. I could tell a story to our listeners, too, but they did not know where everything was at. They did not know all their investments. They did not know all their life insurance. They didn't know any where everything was at. And over the course of a year, we have kept finding things here. So a mistake investors make can be not knowing where things are at.
And I even gave him, I put a book together for this guy. I put a book together with tabs of where his investments were, but he was still confused. So, you know, consolidation is good. One tab, it's all right here.
Mm-hmm.
But that's up to the listeners where it is. And it's we're just trying to help people. But that's another mistake people have, is too many investments, two different places. You know, if you're young enough, that's fine. If you get older, you better consolidate. That's my point of view.
Here's one that came across my desk, I'd say about 2 weeks ago. A prospect was interviewing us, Jack, and I was interviewing them to see if there was a good fit or potential good fit for us to work with them. And, you know, he, as I got into it more and more, found out that he liked individual stocks and was doing stock trading, which I'm not saying is wrong. But all of a sudden, I went into how we are not stock traders here, and that we are investment managers and financial planners for people. And he was just all about the trading of stocks. And one of the things that I matched him up with is that I basically said, I don't think this is going to be a good fit. And we went out to give him a couple referrals to some other firms that do more of this type of thing that fit this person's needs better. But even in that case, as I dug into it and found out about investments, what he made over the past year and trading is, and he did all his own trading, and basically going to Ameritrade would probably be the best for him, or another firm that he could do online. But he was trading a lot and not making any money. So sometimes trading too much or moving things around too much can sometimes upset the apple cart and you don't make a lot of money.
Yeah, it's not really then investing. It's more speculation. You know, I've been talking to people for a long time that you need to have some investments outside the mainstream of the typical mutual fund company. Outside the mainstream would be real estate investment trusts. That'd be natural resources, typically emerging markets, hedge funds, gas managed limited partnerships, which adds some alpha, some stability to your portfolio, but they're not the typical large cap growth. And, you know, meeting with a potential customer yesterday, we talked about, you know, I said, where are you getting all of your income from right now? Well, all dividend paying stocks and mutual funds. And I go, well, that means it's all large value.
Mm-hmm.
Not one thing in small cap, not one thing in mid cap, not one thing in any value situation. No international, no emerging markets, none of the outliers. So he was missing a lot of alpha, a lot of growth, because that was his interpretation of how he gets income.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, you know, that's the way some people view that. So, you know, I like the word you use, Jack, speculation. And really, trading is speculation. So we are financial planners, and that kind of covers another mistake that's out there made by investors. But we're going to come right back shortly after our break here. We're covering the 8 biggest mistakes investors make. And you're listening to WHTC Money Matters with Kerry Cooley.
And Jack Godfrey. We'll be right back. Oh.
Welcome back, listeners. You're listening to WHTC Money Matters. This is your host, Kerry Cooley.
And Jack Godfrey. Reminder, listeners, our show today is being broadcast as a tape show for July the 12th. Kerry and I are off today. We're currently reviewing some of the biggest mistakes investors made. One of the first ones we talked about is having too much stuff all over the place, not knowing where it's at, what it's doing, having consolidated statements, trading too frequently. Now, the next one is maybe getting caught up in the market euphoria, as we call it, is blindly putting your money someplace. You have no idea where it is. Somebody's convinced you to do something, either right or wrong. They may be you're at a financial institution where they convince you to buy stuff, getting a fixed amount of 1.5, or they have a surrender charge for 10 or 15 years. It doesn't match your investment goals or needs. So a lot of people are selling a lot of stuff. So mm-hmm. that's where people make mistakes is getting caught up with
water cooler
story.
Talk.
A story.
Water cooler talk.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jack, when I think about that, I still go back to the common cycle of most investors. And when the market's doing good, like it is now, and I just seen an article again in the Wall Street Journal highlighting this, people feel good, they're excited, and they're seeing more money flow in when the market's high, or we think it's high, we don't know. But then when the market goes down, feelings aren't there, we're not feeling good, we feel sad, and what happens then, more people are, you know, for lack of a better term, freaking out and taking their money out, when it should be actually the opposite. You know, when 08 happened and kept dropping, that was a good time to be buying. Some things were on sale out there. There were some good quality companies. And look, since 08, what the market has done. And now to say, are we at its highest point? We don't know. But that's kind of the cycle of the normal investor on emotions. When emotion, you need to take emotion out of the picture and look at facts and look at, and you need to think opposite.
Well, you need to have, first of all, your budget. How much money do you need? That was the first question we had today in questions and answers. But, you know, many people say, well, have you ever lost people's money? I said, no, we haven't lost money. Their account has been temporarily down. But I can say almost 20 years here, Kerry, 21 for you, that, you know, nobody's lost money. And they've all got 8 to 10% over that period of time, which is, I think, pretty stellar. Mm-hmm. And I like to show people their stuff over a long period of time. And we have things in particular buckets of, you know, we have a lot of retirees. That's the majority of our business. And we try to categorize their investments so you're not needing money in a down market. We generate that with income, guaranteed income, then we have growth, and then when you have your settings of Social Security and pension. So we try to set your budget up that you're taking money off these over here. This is your growth account, which doesn't matter if it's up or down. It does matter, because if it's up, you're probably taking some money off it. If it's down, you're analyzing and see what we need to do or just keep it. And then you have your Social Security and pension. Now, if you don't have two nickels to rub together, then this discussion is not for you.
Yeah.
Well, no, it really
yeah,
isn't.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
That's the whole thing. I mean, if you need every nickel all the time, that's not called an investment. That's called going broke.
Mm-hmm.
You need to get a second or third job while you're retired.
And live within your means.
Well, live within your means. So, you know, we're talking about people who have a few dollars, are able to manage the money correctly. You know, I reviewed a customer a couple weeks ago that nearly 20 years brought in $500,000. Still working at General Motors, retired then, have had their account again nearly 20 years. I've sent them over $400,000 over this time period, and their account's $1 million. Perfect example.
Mm-hmm.
They have listened to me. They know the buckets that we have the money into. Here's where the income's coming from. They fund three of their kids' Roth accounts to the max. They're funding their grandkids' 529. They're truly philanthropic to the church and to other people. They travel big trips three or four times a year, and they can't spend all the money.
Yeah.
It's a prime example of somebody who listens.
Yeah.
And that was a big mistake.
And it wasn't because of fast growth over 1 year. It was good, steady growth.
A long time. And their accounts were down. Had those down years, 02, 08. You know, and they go, Jack, we have faith in you. We know you. We buy good stuff, and we have a plan. But that's a good example of what happens when people freak out and they don't listen. And, you know, one of the biggest things is I always have a 5% rule. You know, we're either up or down 5%. If we're beyond that, then we need to take some more corrective action in those accounts that we need to have 5%. But if you look at $1 million, 5% is 50,000. Mm-hmm. You look at $1,000, 50 bucks. So, you know, it's a difference, but I always say it's the same. 5% is 5%. Mm-hmm. It's just the more money you have, you take 2 million, well, it's 5 or 100,000. So people start getting a little bit more excited, depends on how much is 5%, but still you have to look at 5%. That's my opinion. Standard deviation, 5% negative or positive is what you really got to set your course on. And that's a good rule of thumb. But some people, they don't understand the plan. If they understand the plan, then they're good.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they listen, that's the biggest mistake is people don't listen.
And that happens so often, but that makes us all unique and different. You know, as we move on here to other mistakes that we see investors make, one is we see a lot of investors, and this is not only in this area, this happens in different areas, but putting too much of your money, too much investment in one particular investment. A good example would be you live in an area where there are some good companies that are publicly traded. You know, we have some in our area, and we have seen over the years a lot of people come in holding a lot of this particular stock or this particular stock. And then we start looking through their portfolio, we realize and they have a lot of this. And then the challenge becomes to diversify them out of some of this. And they said, oh, no, that's been good for 20 years for me. I don't want to sell. Well, one of the things as you get older, you need a lot of times move things to a safer investment that will get you some income and have less fluctuation. But that goes back to don't put all your eggs in one basket. You need to, you know, allocate your monies over different asset classes. And you have to realize all investments, and I say all investments, carry some form of risk and some form of reward. So you need to look at that. And that all goes into putting together a diversified portfolio. But all investments are going to have risk out there. You need to look at what kind of risk that you're willing to take. And there's no such thing as a perfect investment out there. There just isn't. That's why when we sit down and our clients, their portfolio is diversified across many different areas. It's also diversified based on their risk, what they're willing to take on their money. It's diversified on what their needs are, because if they're taking income off their investments, that's going to be different than a person like myself and invest differently, because I'm not needing income or taking income off my investments at this point in my life. But that's so important, is the saying goes, don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Well, and we see people who come to us who have taken lots of risk, and they go to what we call the plate liquor dinners. They get a postcard inviting you to a nice restaurant to learn these three things.
Free dinner.
Don't lose all your money. Well, Carrie and I, we have a lot of workshops. Not one workshop do we ever talk about intimidation.
Or an investment.
Or making people fearful. We always talk about strategies 100% of the time. However, some of the people who are in this town and other towns surrounding this, they go to that dinner and it's nice and they get up and thank people. And then all of a sudden it goes into the fear, trepidation, intimidation, we'll never lose your money. And then it's locked up for 7, 10, 15, or a lifetime of surrender, mm-hmm. non-surrender. Then they come to us and want us to fix it. And it's like, why did you buy this? I didn't understand it. And the people said, we're never going to lose our money. I go, yeah, but you're never going to make much money either.
And getting your money out.
And get your money out. So it's all in moderation. It's not freaking out. It's not getting convinced to buy stuff that you don't understand. It's having a plan. It's having a budget. So, you know, one of the investor mistakes is going to some dinner and getting convinced that you ought to buy something.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the time to get more knowledge, to get more product information. Where does it fit? don't be signing your name on a document in a hurry.
Yeah.
And I've
yeah.
seen so many people do that.
Well, and that's why it's important for us, and that's the purpose of this radio show out here, is to educate you, to let you know about different things that are happening out there, to help you make informed decisions. So that's, you know, what's so exciting about what we do in our business is strategy and working with clients that listen. So there's a lot of different things. And is it one size fits all? Absolutely not. Many different investments are needed. And listeners, hey, we're going to be back with the rest of our 8 biggest mistakes investors make right after our break. So stay tuned, and you're listening to WHTC Money Matters. Welcome back, listeners. You've been listening to WHTC Money Matters. We're in our last segment here, and we've been talking about the 8 biggest mistakes investors make. And some of those things have been not knowing everything that you have and having things in a lot of different places. And that doesn't mean putting them in the same investment, but having one statement, consolidating all your investments on one statement. How about emotion? You know, getting caught up too much in emotion is another one. We are human beings, or we have feelings. We can get caught up with the news media and different things that we say. So you need to keep kind of hold in your emotions and make sure you're investing and look at a strategy. Don't get scared. Don't freak out about the market. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. And we're on to another one here, Jack. And what is that?
Well, it's just treating your home as a product of cash. You know, some people will have, first of all, have a mortgage. Might be a 20-year mortgage. They might have one or two home equity loans, because that is going to generate income. So now they have 3 payments, a mortgage and two home equities, and they're starting to feel the pinch of not being able to make all the payments.
Mm-hmm.
So then what do? They have a 20-year mortgage, a couple home equities. They refinance to a 30-year mortgage.
Oh, ouch.
So
it lowers their payment, but they have more interest.
But they got another 10 more years. So, you know, I like people to go the other way. Take a 20, go to 15. Take a 15, go to 10. Take a 5, pay it off. But some people think that their house is a easy way to get money. It is a very easy way to get money, provided you have some down and the bank's willing to take you because you have less risk. But it ends up that you have just turned yourself into a credit card making the minimum payment machine that you don't think about, because it's one way to get money.
Well, and people out there are promoting, you know, reverse mortgages and things like that. Yeah, you can get money out of your house, but then when you pass away, guess what? That house goes to the reverse mortgage company. They sell it. They take the money, and that's where they're going to make their money. So those aren't always cracked up what, you know, they're meant to be. So you have to be careful of, you know, treating your house as an investment is not a good way to go, because are you going to sell your house, put the money in investments and live off the street and not have a house to live in? You need a roof over your head. You need to put groceries on the table. See,
yep.
You know.
Oh, absolutely.
Land and property is an investment, but yet don't treat it as an area where we get a constant cash flow. It's a place where you live.
And it just seems like it's a habit for some people. That's what they've done. And but let's talk the other side of the coin. Some people have been very successful taking that, buying another real estate house, being able to upscale it, sell it off their 401k. Very few people have done that. If you remember the 08 recession, you know, I just remember some people, Jack, I don't want to invest because I can flip houses a little bit better. That year, a couple of people had all their profits gone.
Mm-hmm.
They accumulated these profits down to 1 or 2 last homes. That's where all their investments were, and the value dropped 30, 40, 50%. One person lost their own house because they couldn't make the payments.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people get mortgaged, overextended, can't make minimums. And so that's what we're talking about. And, you know, the next one, and we're talking about investment mistakes people make. The next one is really not rebalancing their portfolio. You know, as you go through, some things have ran up in price. Last year would be small cap growth, really ran up in price. Need to probably readjust those. You know, there's should have certain percentages in certain categories. You know, you might be out of certain categories. You know, you might have been out of natural resources in maybe 12 and 13, but at the end of 13, you should have been buying natural resources, or maybe even at the end of 12, because this year, year to date, they're up 15 to 20%, which is a big number.
It is. And you say a lot there, Jack, with rebalancing. You know, one of the things that we make sure we do with our clients, and, you know, we make sure this is true within the client's 401k plan at work, that they are consistently looking at it on a regular basis and rebalancing it, shifting some from the area that maybe made good money, like you said, small cap last year, and shifting to the area that didn't do so hot last year is a good general rule. But it goes back to always keeping an allocation in all these different asset classes, from large, medium, and small size companies. Jack, you've mentioned real estate. You've mentioned, you know, limited
natural resources,
emerging markets, and
gas.
The list is even broader than that. And what we're learning to do, and we tell our clients to do, is that you need to spread out over more asset classes to minimize your risk, and look at these alternative areas to help enhance your portfolio.
Nope. So, you know, rebalancing is important. Rebalancing too much, you shouldn't do. You just need to rebalance probably once a year to see where you are. And, you know, people are surprised of, you know, what they've made over a year. And then, you know, rebalancing makes a lot of sense. So next one is, you know, almost like using your house as investment. The next one is using your brokerage account, your 401k, as one way of getting cash.
So you and listeners may not know this, but you can actually set up a margin account on your brokerage account, which means you can borrow against your investments without selling them. But you're going to pay a good interest rate on that money, and that can be expensive. So do we usually recommend that, Jack?
No, I don't recommend it. I mean, if people are down to their last couple nickels, I guess, and they don't want to sell their stock because they don't want to, one, pay the short-term capital gains, which is at regular rates, or they don't even want to pay the longer term. So borrowing short-term, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, is applicable. You can do that. Not causing some taxation issues there. But when you say you're constantly borrowing and not paying back, the interest rate adds up. It's higher risk. Your stock might be go down that you're borrowing against. Then there's a margin call. That means you need to put money in your account. It is if it's used, anything used in moderation with a great strategy will work out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's not good for a desperate account.
Well, and that too, you mentioned a margin call, which means that if you've borrowed too much and the market goes down, you're going to be forced to either come up with the cash or sell some of your good quality investments that you may want to keep all along, and then you're in a taxable situation. So in moderation, in looking at, hey, have a strategy behind paying it back, and don't be using it all the time. I like what you said there, Jack. Sometimes people use it in the wrong way or use it to buy other investments. Well, that can get you in trouble. It's kind of like borrowing against your house, or, you know, taking a second mortgage out in your house, buying other property to flip homes, and people got caught in 08.
It's always the ramifications of the bad decision that you got to think of. What if this happens? What if that happens? Again, lots of people, smart people, can make good decisions. It's short term. It works out perfectly. But if you do this long term, that's not going to work out for you because things do blow up. One of the last things, Kerry, is one of the things that we forget to talk about is taxation. You know, I always talk to people about taxation. If you do this, these are the consequences. So I had a customer in my office just a few minutes ago. $2,000 in a small IRA. The person had a large Roth account, had a large 403B account, which is a retirement account for school teachers. And they had an investment that they had out there, an outlier for $2,000. So I went through the taxes and I said, okay, well, you're the 25% taxpayer. Show the tax bracket. She pointed where her taxes were. I said, you got to pay $500. I got to pay $500 to move $2,000? I go, okay, you're this age. Your money's going to double 3.5 times. It's going to go to 4. It's going to go to 8. It's going to go to 16. And then you take half of 16, 8. It could be $24,000. I said, we can keep it in an IRA. When you retire, you got to pay tax on 24, which is a few more dollars. Or you got to pay $500 on $2,000 converted to the Roth and never pay tax again. Mm-hmm. She goes, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to pay the taxes now.
Yep.
So you need to be forthright of what's it going to be. It's going to be a 1099-R. That's your tier you're going to get. Don't throw it away. Give it to your tax preparer. They'll know exactly what you did. Pay the taxes now. And have your account grow tax-free.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always anticipating what the tax questions are and what they should be. And many people who take money out of their Roth account, they're still going to get a 1099-R. But because they made deposits into the Roth account, it's not taxed.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they make a conversion, you have the five-year rule. If you don't hold it for 5 years, you're going to get taxed after 5 years, then that's just like a deposit.
Yeah.
You need to know the rules.
Well, and, you know, when you talk about taxes, Jack, another important thing that we see is knowing in a brokerage account what your cost of purchasing that investment was and keeping track of that. Because sometimes if you switch from one firm to another, you may lose that cost basis. And cost basis is very important because it's going to be the amount that you bought at so that when you go to sell it, you're going to pay tax on the gains. But if you don't have that cost basis, you could end up paying a lot more tax than you want to. And another important thing is to keep track of, and the mutual fund companies are doing a much better job of this, but keeping track of the dividends that are reinvested. Because in a brokerage account, dividends that are reinvested, you're paying tax on that each year. You don't want to pay tax in the end again and have double taxation on your dividends. So that's why it's very, very important to have a good, you know, record of your cost basis. So if you're changing firms, transferring firms, you need to keep that information.
So, yeah, good show, Kerry, talking about the mistakes people make, the investors make. Not all investors, but it's always good to review the strategy, and that's what we're all about here, trying to review with you the do's and don'ts, some of the pitfalls that people make, some of the things that they don't even think about when they invest money. Next week's show, we're going to have Guide to the Market. It's going to be the first 6 months have gone by so quickly.
This is a great show, too, because we get a chance to review what the market's done.
Yeah, what the market's done over a six-month period. Take a look at, what's done the best, what's done the worst. That's what we're going to talk about next week.
Listeners, you've been listening to WHTC Money Matters with your host, Kerry Cooley.
And Jack Godfrey. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to WHTC Money Matters with your host, Jack Godfrey and Kerry Cooley from the Cooley Godfrey Investment Group of Zealand. The opinions voiced in this show are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial advisor, or tax advisor prior to investing. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC. Be sure to join us next Saturday at this same time for WHTC Money Matters on 1450 WHTC, Holland's hometown station.